Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are fresh off of another red-hot UFC event. You know, it kind of ended on a sour note. I can't lie. We saw the late great, now it is, Israel Adesanya. Actually, that makes it sound like he died. He didn't die, but Israel Adesanya did suffer a defeat, maybe towards the latter stages of his career. On today's episode, we will be doing a full card recap of UFC Saudi Arabia. A lot happened. A lot of unexpected stuff, some good stuff, some bad. We're going to be talking about all of it. Also, going to be recapping the WWE Royal Rumble. It was fantastic. I actually got all my buddies down here to watch it, and it was so fun watching it with all of them. It was actually such a fun time. I'm so glad we were able to do that. Also, going to be checking in with the NBA. A lot of big things have been going down in NBA, including maybe the craziest trade in sports history. I don't know. It's utterly insane. It's taken over the world. We're going to discuss that. Some new things in pop culture. Some new UFC news. We got a lot of fun stuff on today's episode. If you haven't already, check out episode 160 with Jimmy Aulis ahead of his great MMA fight coming up February 15th. Dude, that was so fun. That was one of my favorite podcasts I've recorded. He's just such a fun guy to talk to, guys. Check that one out. But if you're here now, which I hope you are, stick around because we got a lot of fun stuff on today's episode. And as you all know, we kick things off every single week on normal episodes, almost every single normal episode. You know, what is this, 161 episodes right here? We've just about done the same format every single time. So it's interesting enough, but let's get right on into it with some new UFC fights that have been announced. Exciting stuff. Some of these are catching me a bit off guard, including one going down in London, March 22nd. And that's a welterweight action between Kevin Holland. Already back. Kevin Holland takes on Gunnar Nelson. Very confusing at this matchup. Kevin Holland, I think, was so pissed that he lost to Reiner David. He's like, I want to get right back to it. He's dropping down the welterweight and he's taking on Gunnar Nelson. Now, immediately first matchup, Gunnar Nelson is going to want to take Kevin Holland down and submit him, which is absolutely the wrong type of opponent that Kevin Holland should be taking on right now. But on the feet, I give Kevin Holland the nod. Gunnar hasn't lost since returning in, I want to say, 2022. I mean, he's picked up wins over Alex Oliveira and Brian Barberina. Nothing too impressive, but we're finally seeing Gunnar Nelson in almost 2 years. So it's been long overdue. This one in London will probably be on the main card. I obviously got to back Kevin Holland here. You know, I didn't back him against Reiner. I got to back him here, but it's going to be a tough fight for Kevin Holland. Let me just tell you that. No easy roads right here. Moving on to middleweight action at UFC Kansas City, April 26th. We're going to Kansas City. I mean, I also heard rumors we're going to Iowa. We're going to Seattle. We're going everywhere but Minnesota. Come on. Bring us to Minnesota. Come on. Come to Minnesota. You know you want to. You know you want to give us a banger UFC card. But as for now, Kansas City gets a card April 26th at the T-Mobile Center as Michelle Pera, the number 15th ranked middleweight, takes on Abus Magomedov. Abus 3-2 in the UFC on a little two-fight win streak now. A little two-fight win streak now. Not too bad. Wins over Dustin. No, not Dustin. He has a win over Bruno Ferreira. And gosh, I can't even remember the other guy. But this guy's also beaten Sabadu So, Dustin Stolfus. I mean, Abus Magomedov. We know how legit he is. And Michelle Pera, coming off a tough main event loss to Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. I'll be curious to see how he rebounds. But this should be a fun fight. Definitely will be on the main card. Early predictions? I don't know. I might have to go with Abus. It's going to be tough. I'm going to be honest. Women's action on a May 3rd card, which has no date or venue, as the number 9 ranked women's strawweight Marina Rodriguez takes on the number 12 ranked Jillian Robertson. Jillian Savage Robertson has been on an absolute tear. Her win streak is either at 3, 4, maybe even 5 fights right now. It's absolutely crazy. She's been finishing girls left, right, and center. And here comes Marina Rodriguez, who's suffered some tough defeats. I mean, a lot decision loss to Yasmin Lucindo was really rough. Of course, losing to Jessica Andrade. I mean, Marina Rodriguez is in desperate need of a win. This is a perfect fight for her fighting down. But Jillian Robertson will not make it easy. And I'm going to back Jillian Robertson to win this matchup because I think she is just in the prime of her career and she ain't slowing down just yet. Another woman's matchup right here at UFC 314 in Miami, Florida. And this one's probably going to be on the prelims as the number 2 and number 3 women's strawweights, Yan Xiaonan and Virna Jandidova, fight for a title shot, essentially. Winner of this takes on winner of Zhang Weili and Tatiana Suarez, which goes down this upcoming Saturday, by the way. This one, I'm torn. Virna Jandiroba, she's been on absolute tear, but Yan Xiaonan, man, she is freaking good. Oh my gosh, I can't get over how hard she hits, how technical she is. I'm probably backing Yan Xiaonan in this one, but it's going to be a toss-up. Going to be a tricky, tricky matchup. I'm excited. I'm probably going Yan Xiaonan for that one, but it's any girl's game. Let me tell you, it's any girl's game. But those are all the UFC events that we have confirmed. There's so many fake rumors going around on Twitter. I don't even want to talk about any of the rumors. It's kind of getting ridiculous with things. But I did see something very fun and very interesting on Twitter today, and that's that to kick off the year, already 7 undefeated fighters have lost their O's. Starting off, Austin Bashee, who made his debut. He was previously 13-0 and unfortunately lost. But mind you, he was green. He was coming off Dana White's Contender Series. He was bound to suffer a defeat there. I think we let that one slide. Next up, Magomed Gadzaluev, who was previously 9-0. He's now 9-1. He was nowhere near UFC caliber. Okay, he just clearly wasn't ready. It's unfortunate. You also have Clayton Carpenter, but they fed him to Tagirlan and Bekov. What they think was going to happen? Tagirlan Bekov is a very legit, one of the best men's flyweights in the world. You also have Rinya Nakamura, who lost 9-1. That one shocked me. I think Rinya Nakamura was someone I had on my radar for 2025, but I guess not. I guess Rinya's going to suffer a defeat there. Peyton Talbot, of course, he lost to Rowdy Barcelos. Dude was clearly just not ready for a high caliber fighter. We have another fighter on here we're going to bring up later, and then Umar Nurmagomedov. Let's be real. He lost to Merab Dvalishvili, and Merab Dvalishvili is in the best part of his career that he's ever going to be in. I mean, dude is legit in his prime. So I say we give him a nod, but it's also just a weird thought that all of these undefeated fighters taking defeats left, right, and center. This is something to keep on the radar as we have Shavkat fighting this year. We have Khamzat Chimaev fighting this year. We have, where's some other undefeated fighters? There's a couple undefeated fighters hovering around here and there, but I don't know. They're dropping left and right like flies. So keep your ears peeled for some new undefeated fighters as they'll be debuting soon. I'm sure the Contender Series will bring us a bunch of them. But as for top dogs, I mean, everyone kind of has one or two losses here and there. Maybe Usman Nurmagomedov will lose in the Bellator PFL, whatever you want to call it now. But that's all the new UFC news that we have. It's nothing too major, but some fun fights here and there. There's always exciting stuff. We always can find stuff. We can also always find stuff in the pop culture realm, as here are the top 10 new headlines in pop culture. Courtesy of Discussing Film, who gives us new news all the time. First off, the first trailers for Fantastic Four and Jurassic World Rebirth will release over the next 2 days. Fantastic Four is Tuesday and Jurassic World is Wednesday, as I'm recording this on a Monday. It'll be released on Tuesday, so you maybe have already seen the Fantastic Four First Steps trailer and you think it's fantastic. Both those movies looking to be blockbusters. I'm probably going to the theater for them. I'm excited. I don't know. I have big expectations for both of these franchises. I hope they can live up to their expectations. I don't know. We'll have to see. Really never know. Number two, Joe Biden has signed with Hollywood talent agency CAA. I can't believe that's actual news. I don't want to get political on here. Just know Joe Biden isn't my favorite human being. I like a lot of human beings. Joe Biden, not in the top 10, that's for sure. Number three, The Last of Us Part Two game will be adapted over more than 2 seasons for the HBO show. I think it's pretty likely that our story will extend past the season 3, of course. I already know that they kill Pedro Pascal's character in the video game. I'm hoping they don't do that in the show because I don't know if I'll watch it with just Ellie. Her actress is, she's not that unbearable. I think people give her way too much hate, but she's certainly not my favorite cup of tea. I don't know. I'll be interested to see. I'll be very curious to see. Number four, Invincible Season 3 debuts with 100% in Rotten Tomatoes. All 3 seasons have now debuted at 100%. I mean, Invincible is so freaking good. I can't wait for it to come out this Thursday. You already know I'm going to be watching it. One of the best shows out there, guys. Trust me, even though it's an animated show, trust me, I hate animated shows now. You know, I don't like anime. I don't watch any cartoons or anything. Invincible is so good. It is honestly better than a lot of shows with real life actors in them. It is phenomenal. The voice acting is incredible. Please go check it out. Please, I beg you. I want other people to witness this. Number five, Zac Efron and Will Ferrell will star in an untitled comedy film directed by Nicholas Stoller. The film follows a young convict fresh out of prison who takes a reality TV judge hostage, blaming him for ruining his life. I like this. It's very curious, but I can't lie. Zac Efron and Will Ferrell, they really need to put something together. They really haven't put out a banger movie in a minute. This could be a potentially career revitalizing time, but Will Ferrell, he's entering the latter stages. Zac Efron, since unfortunately having to get plastic surgery, just hasn't hit the same. I don't think he's a thirst trap anymore, but hey, I'm a dude, so I wouldn't really know. Number six, what should we talk about? A lot of stuff with the Grammys, but I could care less about the Grammys. I'm going to be honest. Y'all see Kanye and his wife? Ridiculous. Very ridiculous. They're making a bunch of new movies. Megan 2.0. Colin Farrell won something. Actually, Anthony Starr won a Saturn Award for his performance as Homelander in The Boys. One of the best performances I've ever seen. Anthony Starr is a stud. I can't wait for the final season of The Boys to come out. It's going to be groundbreaking. It's going to be insane. I'm poised for it. You also have the final seasons of You, Cobra Kai, Stranger Things. There's a lot of new things coming out this year. Going to be honest, they aren't giving us much. They're not giving us much. The final thing that I will actually mention in terms of pop culture is we now have a new look at Daniel Craig as, of course, Benoit Blanc, the great detective, in Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, and he is poised in the forest looking all mysterious. I absolutely love those movies. Knives Out was great. The Glass Onion was also really great. I can't lie. My one issue with these films, and I think it's like what's really tough to do a plot twist, is that, and this happened with, they did Death on the Nile, they did Murder on the Orient Express, it's you introduce all these characters, so it's like the plot twist, like, they've obviously done a decent job with, I think, both of those movies, and Knives Out and A Glass Onion, but it's really tough when you introduce, like, 8, 9, 7, 5, 6 characters, and it's like, you know one of them's the murderer. You know one of them's murderer. Now, the plot twist and all of them have done justice, but it's also just, it gets to a point where you're kind of like, I know one of you is the killer, it's just a matter of who. But I'll say they do a pretty good job of it. You know, it's tough in Hollywood nowadays, and it's tough to find good movies. It really is. It really is tough to find good movies. I've been recommended some shows to watch, Severance, Ted Lasso. Movie-wise, I was recommended some Quentin Tarantino films, but I've kind of just been grinding YouTube. Kind of been watching YouTube when I have stuff, but once I get into a TV show, I just become fully immersed in it. It just happens to me all the time. The Sopranos, You, Squid Games, most recently Stranger Things. So it's really tough for me to just hop from show to show to show. I know it is for some people, but for me, you know, I really like to take my time with the show, appreciate it. So we'll have to see what new stuff is coming out. But those are all your top 10, you know, new headlines in pop culture. They really haven't given us much to work with. It's been, I don't know, it's been too stagnant, but there's been a couple big things. I think we're really building up to this part of the year where new movies come out here left, right, and center. I know Lexi wants to see the new Captain America movie, but I just don't have that much interest in it. So we'll have to see, but that's not the biggest thing going on in the world. I think the biggest thing going on in the world is it's not Donald Trump. It's not Canada. It's not Russia. No. It's nothing to do politically. It is the NBA. Because the NBA has definitely done a stunt here to garner attention. Let me tell you that for a fact. They have done this stunt to garner attention because Luka Doncic to the Lakers makes zero sense. Zero sense. This is one of the wildest trades I've seen in my life as the Mavericks, who are now ranked number 9th, trade their star player, runner-up for MVP, the biggest stud in the playoffs last year, to the number 5 team Lakers. And the Lakers trade away Anthony Davis, who is their star big. It makes no sense. There's just nothing to really say, and everyone's been talking about it. You know, I won't drag on too much about it, but it's truly, truly crazy what they've done, and I think they did it on purpose to bring more eyes in because the NBA is failing right now, right? Their viewership is at an all-time low, so maybe that's the play, but at the end of the day, it'll be interesting to see Anthony Davis with Kyrie, and it'll be very interesting to see LeBron and Luka. That just feels like an overpowered team, LeBron and Luka, but we're back, guys, with our NBA check-ins. That is right, NBA check-ins, NHL check-ins. We're going to do an NBA check-in once a week and an NHL check-in once a week on every other episode, as now we're not going to have any more NFL. You know, we're going to do our Super Bowl predictions. We'll do our Super Bowl recap, and that'll be that. No more NFL for the rest of the year, which I'm not too mad about. Ever since the Vikings got eliminated, I could care less. And Eagles and Chiefs, such a boring matchup. But we'll drop our Super Bowl prediction on the next episode. But let's look at the current state of the NBA as we check out the Eastern Conference. Cavaliers, number 1 team, 40-9. There are only 2 teams with single-digit losses, and they are both the top teams in their conferences. Cavs, 40-9, 4-game win streak, 24-3. At home, they've been doing fantastic, 26-6 in the East. They're good. Cavs are a damn good team, and it's pretty good. Pretty good year for them. I don't know how they're going to do in the playoffs, but, I mean, Donovan Mitchell's a stud. You got Darius Garland. You got Evan Mobley. You got a killer team with that Cavaliers team, and I'm excited to see how they do throughout the year. And number 2, you have the Celtics, 35-15, as they should be. Not as dominant as last year. 3-game win streak, though. They are 7-3 over their last 10, 5.5 games behind the Cavs. I think the Celtics are the best potential to repeat out of all the NBA champions, but this season is so unpredictable. I don't know if they're going to do it. I don't know if they're going to do it. They aren't as good as they were last year. They're still pretty dang good. Knicks at 3, 32-17, right where I would expect them to be. They've gone 7-3 over the last 10, playing some damn good basketball. You know, Karl Anthony Towns, that trade has benefited the Knicks way more than it's benefited the Timberwolves. Holy cow, we'll talk about the Timberwolves in a second. But, I mean, are we going to talk about just how freaking good, oh my gosh, who is their point guard? Who is their point guard? Star point guard for the Knicks. I am mind blanking right now. I'm embarrassing myself. Stupendously. Someone help me. Jalen Brunson. Thank you, Brain, for Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson's been an absolute stud. One of my favorite point guards to watch. And I mean, he was an absolute dog at Villanova, and he's been an absolute dog since joining the NBA. Number four, the Pacers. 27-20, 3-game win streak. Tyrese Halliburton, Pascal Siakam. What more do you want? Pacers at 4. Good to see. Bucks at 5. It's been 6-4, 3-game losing streak. They're only 5 games above 500. I'm going to be honest. Damian Lillard and Giannis should be way better than they are, but that's just kind of how it happens when you pair one star with another. It rarely works out. At number 6, the Heat, 24-23. Jimmy Butler's going somewhere at the trade deadline, I guarantee. They've been suspending him all over the place. But other than that, you got a pretty good team. I got Bam Adebayo on a fantasy basketball team, and Jame Jacquez Jr. I got him, UCLA legend. Number 7, the Pistons, 25-24. What a turnaround from last year. I got to give it to the Pistons. Kate Cunningham is the star they want him to be. Durin's an absolute dog. You also have other players on the Pistons. I'm going to be honest, I don't really know their roster. Reggie Jackson used to be a Piston, but Pistons at 7. Good for them. Magic at 8, 24-26. They're hanging in there. Hawks, 22-27. Zachary Rissar, I mean, he's filling in a role when he can. Trey Young, I think it's just going to be one of those guys who just never wins the big one. Bulls at 10, as you would expect. They recently traded away Zach LaVine. I don't even know who they have now. Who did they get in that trade? I don't know, but what's his face? Oh my gosh, De'Aaron Fox is no longer on the Kings. He's on the Spurs, and Zach LaVine is on the what team is he on? He's on the Kings. So I don't know what the Bulls got out of that, but here's what it is. 76ers at 11. Yeah, they're rough. Raptors at 12. Been a rough season for them. Nets at 13. Hornets and Wizards. I mean, Hornets are 12-34. Wizards are 7-41. Wizards are one of the worst teams as of right now in NBA history. They just have no star power. They really, Alex Saar really needs to fill in his shoes, and Jordan Poole's your best player. So you really need help. I guess Kyle Kuzma when he's healthy. But East, I mean, it is a big contrast between the top three teams and the rest of the pack. But you have a good run in, I think from probably 4 to 10, you know, those 6 spots, 7 spots right there is where you're going to see a lot of mix up towards the end of the season. But Cavaliers leading the pack. Nice to see. Moving on to the Western side of things. Thunder 38-9. They're the best team in the West. 1-game win streak, 7-3. They're 23 at home. 7-3 of their last 10, but 23 at home has been pretty good. They're young, they're hungry, and they're probably my favorites to win the NBA championship. I just think when it comes to the playoffs, that's where they're going to need to lock in. And number 2, Grizzlies, 33-16 with healthy Ja Morant. Even got Zach Edey out there. You got Jaren Jackson, of course. This team is amazing. 8-2 over the last 10. They're tied for the best 10-game stretch currently in the NBA. 2-game win streak, 25 at home. Great time to be a Grizzlies fan. And number 3, I mean, good, the Rockets. All right, one of the worst teams last year. They're now number 3. 16 games above 500. This team is just fantastic. Fantastic. And the thing is they don't have a star. They really don't. You know, you got Alperen Sengun. He's amazing. Jalen Green, Amon Thompson, Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet, Steven Adams, Cam Whitmore. Okay, they all just kind of blend together. Jabari Smith Jr., okay, Auburn legend. He's a stud. Reed Shepard's been a great draft pick. This team just kind of works together. And they're good, all right? That's just all they really need to do to keep the winning coming. So good for them. And then they're up there with some heavy hitters. Nuggets at 4, 30-19, 2-game win streak. You already knew the Nuggets were good. Lakers, I mean, number 5 team, 28-19, 2-game win streak. They're 8-2, and I want you to know that they just got Luka Doncic. So the Lakers are probably going to skyrocket to the top. It's insane. It's insane. Clippers at 6, 28-21. When you have James Harden and Paul George, I would hope. Actually, is Paul George on this team anymore? Did they trade Paul George? Is Paul George on the 76ers, actually? Did they trade him back? Let's see. James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Ivica Zuba, Mo Bamba, Chris Duncan, Porter. Yeah, they traded him. I completely forgot about that. But Clippers at 6, as expected. My Timberwolves at 7, 27-22. Just sigh. Just sigh. It's just, Julius Randle isn't a bad player, but we have no business trading Cat. We had no business trading Cat. It's not worked out, and I hear we might bring in Jimmy Butler. I think trading Julius Randle might be our best play, but I think if we trade him, We need to train for someone we can replace. And I'm not trying to say that we can't, you know, have Naz Reid be a starter, but Naz Reid being a six man is just so clutch. And if we trade for Jimmy Butler, I mean, what, just Jaden McDaniels going to run the four spot? I don't know. Luke Garza has been great off the bench. Joe Ingles is a great veteran presence. Rob Dillingham is as good as expected. We also got Jalen Clark, Josh Minot, Terrence Chan Jr., Leonard Miller. We got a lot of good young stars, but it's trade just hasn't worked out for us. Suns at 8, 25 and 23. I just think Devin Booker never really had the foundation. Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant are past their prime. I don't know what they're going to do. Mavericks 26 and 24. I'm sorry if you're a Mavericks fan, you're doomed. I'm sorry if you're a Mavericks fan, your season's over. Kings at number 10, 24 and 24. It's not over. You just got Zach LaVine. Exciting stuff, let me tell you. But you lost your star player. You lost your star player. You still got DeMontis Sabonis, right? DeMontis Sabonis on the Kings, right? I'm pretty sure he is. Yeah, you got DeMontis, but you don't got De'Aaron Fox anymore. Warriors at 11, 24, and 24. It's crazy that they would be like the 8th best team, 7th best team in the Eastern Conference. But Warriors, you know, Curry, still the best player on his team. And I mean, he's going to retire a legend. He's done a lot of things, but the Warriors dynasty has come to an end. Spurs at 12. You know, every single time I do a career sim, not career sim, a league sim on the Spurs, they always end the second half of the season so good. I just think the game doesn't know what to do with Victor Wembanyama because he's so freaking nasty. But they just got De'Aaron Fox. They're going to be much better. I think the Spurs have a little turnaround, make the play-in, make it at the 8th or 7th seed, and maybe make a little run in the playoffs. We'll have to see. Trailblazers at 13. I mean, I want you to know the Trailblazers, their best player, DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton's the best player on this team. It is rough. It is rough. Listen to this roster. Denny Avija, Onfrey Simmons, Scoot Henderson, DeAndre Ayton, Shaden Sharp, Donovan Klingon, Tumani Kamara, Dopo Rethe, Jabari Walker, Chris Murray, Matisse Thybulle, Donald Ball, and Robert Williams III. What happened to the Trailblazers? What is going on with their team? It's atrocious. Pelicans at 12 and 37, five-game losing streak. I think Zion's got to go. I think Zion's got to go. You got to fully rebuild your team. Brandon Ingram got to go. Something's got to be fixed. It really does. That brings us to the Jazz, number 15. Just as bad as last year. Look, Walker Kessler's probably your best player. I'm going to be honest. 11 and 36. Yeah, but they won yesterday. Good for the Jazz. The Jazz won yesterday. Good for them. I do want to say the Timberwolves lost to the Wizards. So I don't really want to talk about it, but that's your little NBA check-in. A lot of stuff. A lot of action going down. End of the season. Second half, I should say. Should be exciting. We're reaching about the halfway point. Actually, I think we're past the halfway point. And I'll tell you what else we're halfway to, and that is WrestleMania. You know me, I'm a big WWE nerd, and we have the second biggest event of the year. It's not SummerSlam. It's not Survivor Series. It is the Royal Rumble. Royal Rumble, I think, is actually the single biggest match they do. The men's Royal Rumble is the single biggest match that they put on, and it was fantastic, guys. This year, one of the best Rumbles I've ever seen. Now, I'm torn on it, but I mean, let's talk about it because it was fantastic. We get it going. We start off with the Women's Royal Rumble, and I introduced two of my roommates to it for the first time, and they were entertained by the Women's Royal Rumble. Little did they know how good it would get as we got through the rest of the card, but this was fantastic. You know, it was a pretty good Women's Royal Rumble. I will say it started slow. It did not really pick up until I'll say, dare I even say, once the final person had came in. We were missing shocking returns. We had a couple, but AJ Lee was definitely someone we all wanted to see. I think it was just her, I'm going to be honest. But most eliminations, Charlotte Flair had 4. Of course, we all know Charlotte Flair won. This Rumble was an hour and 10 minutes, 20 seconds. It was a long one. It was a long one. And, you know, you had a lot of people in there a while, you know. Io Sky at 1, Liv Morgan at 2, Roxanne Perez at 3, all putting over an hour in the ring. You also had Bianca Belair at 10. She put just under 50 minutes in. It was good. It was good. Roxanne Perez was an absolute stud. Okay, I just want to say is that she was runner-up to Charlotte Flair, and it's clear to see that they think highly of Roxanne Perez, and I could see her being a future champion next year. I could see her being the Women's Royal Rumble winner next year. Roxanne Perez was an absolute stud. You had some fillers, Lyra Valkyra, Chelsea Green was entertaining, you know, Piper Niven, Ivy Nile, Zoe Stark, you had Lash Legend coming in from NXT, Shayna Baszler, it's crazy Shayna Baszler's drop-off. It's kind of crazy. Bayley, she had 46 minutes, but no one was really rocking with her. Maxine Dupri was entertaining when she was in. Naomi put in 38 minutes. Good to see. Jada Parker coming in from NXT was cool. Jordynne Grace showing up from TNA. She was fantastic. She was fantastic. Her and Julia, they are going to be poised for some big matchups. Julia at 28 was pretty entertaining. Nia Jax at 29. Nia Jax was the Logan Paul of this Royal Rumble, but not as bad. You know, she knows her place. She always eliminates someone, is kicking butt, and then everyone teams up on her and eliminates her. You had Trish Stratus coming out, which is entertaining. Trish Stratus, 13 minutes, 13 seconds. Good for her. Stephanie Vicar from NXT was doing good. I think the biggest shocker was, honestly, Nikki Bella came out at 30. That was somewhat shocking, but Alexa Bliss at 21. Fantastic. Only 11 minutes in there, but she's going to be back, and we're going to work her up to some big title shots. Natalya, they gave almost 20 minutes. No idea how Natalya was kicking butt in there. That made no sense, but, I mean, not too bad. Not too bad. Charlotte Flair eliminating what's her face? Order. I'm trying to think. Order. Roxanne Perez was eliminated at 29. I don't think. Oh, let me see. Who was eliminated at 28? So the final three, you had Nia Jax. You had, I actually thought they might give it to Nia Jax. You had Nikki Bella, Nia Jax, Roxanne Perez, and Charlotte Flair. But I thought Charlotte Flair would win. She did. She went 15 minutes. It was expected. It was expected, and her versus Tiffany Stratton is going to be amazing. One of these women is taking on what's-her-face, Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania. I don't know who. I think a lot of people are thinking Io Sky, which I could get behind. Io Sky, obviously, Io Sky odd, weirdly gets WrestleMania buildups, and after WrestleMania kind of dips off, but I can get behind her taking on Rhea Ripley. Beating her? Absolutely not, but certainly facing her. Liv Morgan and Alexa Bliss could have a fantastic feud, but yeah, decent Royal Rumble. I give it a 8 out of 10. It was entertaining to an extent, but no AJ Lee. No AJ Lee, you get a thumbs down. No AJ Lee, you get a big thumbs down. Following that, you had a 2 out of 3 falls match for the WWE Tag Team Championships, DIY versus the Motor City Machine Guns, and the crowd wasn't into this one. Okay, the crowd really built up throughout the event, and this took them a bit getting into. You know, DIY gets the first pinfall, Motor City Machine Guns get the second, and then, weirdly, you know, this match ran 14 minutes, you have it end with the Street Profits coming out in black hoods. They take them off. You're like, oh, it's the Street Profits. They're still in the WWE. What in the world? They then attack Motor City Machine Guns. You're like, oh, they just heel turned, and now they're going to side to DIY. Then they attack DIY after the match. So I don't know what angle they're doing on going. I don't know what they're going to freaking do with that. But Motor City Machine Guns, excellent wrestlers. DIY is excellent wrestlers. I don't know, the tag team divisions are just dead. There's no Hardy Boys, there's no Dudleys, there's no Usos, there's no real heavy hitters in the tag team division, and I think what you really need to do is you really need to put these belts on people who are going to do stuff with them. Like, I want to see Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, who I'm surprised didn't get a Royal Rumble entrance. I really am. I'm surprised they didn't give them a Royal Rumble entrance. But I want them to have the belts. I want them to parade around the belts. There's just, you're in need of something. You're in need of a switch up. I just don't know what it was. But this wasn't a bad match. This was an 8 out of 10 match. Good match. Did what it had to. The ladder match, though, here's the thing, and I'm going to say this, is that every time I see a Cody Rhodes match, every time I see a Kevin Owens match, I'm always like, what are they going to do different? And they always do something different, and they always impress me. This was a fantastic match. I was watching with my buddies. They were going ballistic. 25 minutes of just war, of bumps from both these guys, which looked so stiff, so hard. I mean, there was one where Kevin Owens sent Cody Rhodes. He hit him with like a, I don't even know, it was like a twisting suplex, and Cody Rhodes landed on the ladder. It looked like his back broke. And then, of course, the finishing thing where we thought we were going to see the finishing sequence where we saw Cody Rhodes almost get pile-drived. He picks Kevin Owens and slams him through a ladder over his head. It looked like his neck and back were completely broken. Kevin Owens sold it so good. He was bleeding. When he cut himself, no one even noticed a beautiful slash with the razor. It was fantastic. And the image of Cody Rhodes holding the belt over Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens was fantastic. And I don't know what angle you go here. You know, Elimination Chamber is obviously coming up. So many angles for that. But I don't know if you go a Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn feud build up to WrestleMania. If you do Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, I think that would be a fantastic feud right there. I think that'd be a great singles match. But I'm very curious to see. But the Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes saga has come to an end. Cody Rhodes now has the Undisputed and Winged Eagle Championship belts back. This was a great match. It's a 9 out of 10. 10 out of 10, dare I say. One of the best ladder matches I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of ladder matches in my day. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we got to the main event. The one match we all cared about, the men's Royal Rumble, minute 20, 15 seconds. Long one. Long one, boys. If you could have watched a full movie in the time this Royal Rumble took place. It was a banger, though. And, I mean, are we going to talk about the results here? Let's go through the whole Rumble. We're going to go through the whole Rumble. So, we kick things off. Rey Mysterio. You're like, okay, Rey Mysterio starting off. No name. If you're watching this, maybe one who doesn't really watch it, You know him. And number two, Penta, man. And Penta was an absolute dog in this. Zero dinero, dude. He was so fun to watch. And him and Rey Mysterio's match was going good right before his. They might have a WrestleMania match. They were so good. Penta put in 24. Actually, Rey put in 24 minutes. Penta put in 42. He even got an elimination. All right. He eliminated Ludwig Kaiser in like 6 freaking seconds. There's a word that Ludwig Kaiser came in at 13. He was clearly in there for a long time. And then Michael Cole is like, oh my gosh, did he break Santino Marella's record? And I was like, no, to break Santino Marella's record, you have to, like, it's almost impossible to beat his record. It's really tough, but they'll probably try to. But it was irritating. Chad Gable comes in number three. He did good. Carmelo Hayes being buried in 6 minutes, 59 seconds, not on my bingo card. Clearly, they don't think too high of him. They had Santos Escobar looking better in that match than they had Carmelo Hayes looking. Very odd showing there. Otis came in, which is entertaining. Braun Breaker, 22 minutes, came in at number 7. Dude had 3 eliminations. Braun Breaker, I mean, this dude is going to be a great WWE champion, World Heavyweight champion. I am so excited to see what they do with Braun Breaker. He's going to get the Gunther treatment, I think. And honestly, he's a bit different from Gunther in the fact that he is just so dominant. He is so physical. It is very entertaining to watch him wrestle. I am very, very excited to see what happens with Mr. Braun Breaker. After that, you got iShowSpeed, and iShowSpeed, you know, Yuta Kira Tozawa coming out, and then Carmelo Hayes attacked him, and then Triple H is like, we need somebody to go in. Speed runs out there. Speed starts hitting the suey. He's going absolutely crazy. It was so funny. He eliminated Otis, and then Braun Breaker freaking spears him in just brutal fashion. And when he gets sent out to the outside of the ring, I don't even know who threw him out. Was it Jacob Fatu? I think it might have been Otis or someone. Someone threw him over the announce table. It was so entertaining. Speed's taking some hard hits, but this is what I want to see when you do celebrities in WWE rings. You know, you can only have so many Logan Pauls, so many Bad Bunnies. What Speed does is he shows up, he gets his act super cocky, and then he takes a stiff hit. Very entertaining. Sheamus came in at number 9, 15 minutes, 38 seconds from him. Very good. You had Jimmy Uso in there. Andrade. Andrade only in for 3 minutes, 17 seconds. Very interesting. Then in came at number 16, Jacob Fatu. Him and Roman Reigns tie for the most eliminations in the match with 4. Actually, yeah, the Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu. And I'll say the one shocking moment was Fatu being thrown out by Strowman. So clearly their feud isn't over, but interesting angle there. Interesting angle. Jacob coming in at 12, very entertaining. The Miz at 14, good pop. Good pop seeing The Miz. And then number 15. He was only in there 3 minutes, 35 seconds, but Joe Hendry. I mean, they were lacking in surprise entrance here, but Joe Hendry, so amazing. So amazing to see him. It's a shame we didn't get any Nick Nemeth, Dolph Ziggler, any Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona, any Jeff Hardys, any of them, any Omoses, but you know what? I'll take what we can get. And number 16, Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns at 16, very, very shocking. Coming out here, put in 37 minutes. I mean, he was an absolute stud in there. And I mean, it's Roman Reigns. We know how good he is. And number 17, Drew McIntyre. Coming in at number 21. Actually, came in at number 17. Was eliminated at number 21 after almost 30 minutes. And apparently his elimination was botched or something. Damian Priest eliminated him, but he looked visually pissed, verbally pissed. I don't know what's going on with Drew McIntyre, but him and Damian Priest could have a fire feud at WrestleMania. Finn Balor at 18. I mean, kind of buried, not going to lie. Shinsuke Nakamura at 19. They don't think too highly of him anymore. All right. Number 20, Jey Uso. And guys, hold your horses. He had 3 eliminations, went 37 minutes. Hold your horses on Jey Uso. Hold your horses. And number 21, AJ Styles was good, back with his old theme song. And number 22, Braun Strowman. And then at number 23, he went 30 minutes, 3 eliminations. John freaking Cena, man. John Cena, it was so good to see him come out, man. It's tough to watch. It's tough to watch him, man, because he's so freaking good. He's clearly giving it his all for this final run. And oh, man, he was so good in the Rumble. And number 24, CM Punk. Boys were going crazy. Boys were going crazy when CM Punk came out. And then Seth Rollins at 25. Insane. And then we had an issue. Okay, because you've literally just gone Joe Hendry, Roman Reigns, Drew McIntyre, Finn Balor, Shinsuke Nakamura, Jey Uso, AJ Styles, Braun Strowman, John Cena, CM Punk, Seth Rollins. Then you give us Dirty Dominic Mysterio. Okay. Then at 27, Sami Zayn. Okay. Then Damian Priest at 28, LA Knight at 29, and Logan Paul at 30. So it died off so hard, you were kind of like, oh my gosh, Logan Paul's 30. And not only does Logan Paul come out, he finishes in the final three. He eliminates CM Punk, who eliminated Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. It made no sense. It really made no sense. Your final three end up being Jey Uso, Logan Paul, and John Cena. And I think everyone's kind of thoughts right there were, oh my gosh, they're actually going to have John Cena do this. But the fact that Drew McIntyre eliminated at 21, the fact that you have CM Punk eliminated at 27, you have Roman Reigns eliminated at 25, you have Seth Rollins out at 26, very odd. I don't know what angles they're going to do. They're building up a Seth Rollins-Roman Reigns match, but they also have CM Punk and Roman Reigns. I mean, they have CM Punk and Seth Rollins feuding. I don't know if we're going to do a triple threat match there. Very weird stuff. Final three, Logan Paul is finally thrown out by John Cena, which was so satisfying. So satisfying. And Logan Paul goes out, and you kind of have this realization, it's Jey Uso and John Cena. And I just think we all had the same reaction, like where we're like, it's got to be John, right? There's no way they go with Jey Uso. And lo and behold, they're belling on the outside. John Cena gets him up for the attitude adjustment. He slips over his back. He pushes John Cena out. John Cena lands on both his feet in shocking motion. In a shocking moment, I should better say shocking motion. It was a shocking motion, if you want to put it like that. And John Cena loses. And Jey Uso wins the Royal Rumble. Shocking. Utterly, utterly shocking. I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe it. Jey Uso is going to WrestleMania, and they're going to do him versus Gunther again. I don't understand the angle. We just saw it last week. Like, I just saw Jey Uso lose to him. I've seen Jey Uso lose repeatedly to Damian Priest, to Bron Breakker. I mean, I don't know what the play was here. It felt last minute. It felt last second. But, man, they teased us all with John Cena winning. They teased us all with John Cena winning. But now there's only two routes for John Cena. He goes to WrestleMania and faces Cody Rhodes, which I'll be honest, I'm so behind that. I want that so badly, especially if he beats Cody Rhodes. Oh, it'd be fantastic. Or he's not going to be in a titles match. But here's the thing. John Cena is at a point where it feels like he's the main event of WrestleMania. It feels like he's the main event. So it's tricky to see what they're going to do. I don't know. The Elimination Chamber is March 1st. That's the next WWE event I will be watching. Then it's a month and a half until WrestleMania. I mean, there is still so much build-up time. I mean, you're going to spend the next 4 weeks building up to Elimination Chamber, which we don't even know what the chamber's for. Well, the women's chambers could be for Rhea Ripley, but is the men's for the Cody Rhodes title shot? I don't know. But this Royal Rumble, I'm going to be honest, it wasn't the best, but it was certainly better than what we've gotten, you know? Because let me just list you some heaters. 2008, bang. 2010, banger. We go through this patch from 2011 to essentially 2016, no good rumbles. 2017, 2018, good. I mean, I'd put them in great. 2019 was okay, good moments. 2020, one of the best. And then, you know, 21, no crowd. 22, 23, 24 have all kind of been lacking. 2025, one of the better ones we've seen. There have been betters, but certainly there have been a lot worse than this one. So the Royal Rumble has commenced. No John Cena. No John Cena winning. He didn't win his final Royal Rumble. It really makes me sad. But guess what? He'll be back. He'll be hungry. I don't know who he's fighting against. Gunther. They've swerved us there. They really have. I don't know if we're going to do John Cena versus... it's not going to be Logan Paul. If Logan Paul's going to wrestle anyone, it's going to be AJ Styles, I think. I just don't know who else he could wrestle. That Randy Orton returns. Those two have their final WrestleMania match. That would be really satisfying. But wouldn't be for the belt, though. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm excited. They've certainly hit us with some swerves. And you know what? It's fun to be in an unpredictable position with the WWE. So I'm excited to see what they do. And we'll have to keep watching week in and week out. But guys, it's long been coming. It's long been coming. I'm excited to talk about it. Let's go over UFC Saudi Arabia, because the entire landscape of the UFC has also changed. You know, not just wrestling in general. I'm trying to think, like, wrestling's been completely changed. The landscape of the UFC's changed. I don't know, whatever segue you want to call it. But Saudi Arabia went down. We go 9-4 on predictions, bringing our yearly total to 26-14. Plus 12 isn't too bad. Got some fights to talk about here. Let's get right on into it. Kicking off the night, we had some heavyweight action between Hamdi Abdulhabab and Jamal Pogues, and I was rigged right off the bat by these Saudi judges. Guys, let me tell you, I should have got 100% on predictions. I'm just kidding. But for this first fight, I mean, there's no way Hamdi won this fight. I'm going to be honest. There's just no shot Hamdi won this fight. He takes the decision in this one, not entertaining in the slightest, might I add. Jamal outstrikes him 69-44, insignificant and total strikes. Hamdi landed one takedown in round one for 57 seconds of control time. He was outstruck every single round, wins a split decision. To make matters even more comical, Jamal Pogues is then cut after this matchup, which I found pretty funny by the UFC. But I mean, you know, he's gone 1-2, which isn't too impressive. Actually, he went 2-2. Hasn't been that bad, but tough luck for Jamal Pogues. Clearly wasn't entertaining enough. I don't think that helps when you're not entertaining. But yeah, as for Hamdi, he improves to 6-0. Good for him. He'll stick around. There's plenty of heavyweights out there for him to fight. I mean, Tai Tuivasa would be a great opponent. Hamdi versus Tai Tuivasa. There's your next matchup right there. Even Shamil Gaziev. There's a fight that you could do potentially, but I mean, Hamdi, not the most entertaining guy, kicking off the night. Good for him. Odds were minus 110. We missed. Jamal Pogues, I forgot that the judges don't like you. My bad. After that, we got things going. All right, first performance bonus of the night is Bogdan Gorod. What a dog this guy is. What a dog Bogdan Gorod is. And I mean, well, dog Bogdan Gorod, it just works perfectly. It fits. He was coming in, minus 125 favorite, and he extends his win streak to 4 and adds his 9th career TKO. Good for him. Just beats Lucas Alexander. Silly. Beats his face right into the ground. As for Lucas, he's now sitting at 1-3 in the UFC. He's been finished in every single loss. 46 in even strikes at 34. 3 of 8 on takedowns. I mean, Bogdan has a simple game plan. Take him down. Ground and pound. And round one, you know, Lucas was getting the better of him on the feet. Truly was, even had a reversal on the ground. But when it got to round three, it took one takedown for Bogdan, got into top mount, and just leveled him, laid into him some ferocious hits. And that's what I love to see. That ferocity, that intensity, that's what we love to see in the men's featherweight division. And Bogdan, you know what? You're 29 years old. You're a young buck. There's plenty of talent out there for you to fight. And someone who I can really think of, you know. Steve Garcia Jr. has a big fight, or whatever is it, Steve something. Taking on Edson Barboza. Loser of that versus Bogdan Grog could be a fun fight. You also have Chepe Mariscal, Jack Jenkins. There's a lot of fun guys out there for Bogdan, but I think if they give him someone of lesser competition, it could be a good stepping stone for good old Bogdan Grog. But getting a win here, what you need to do, and Bogdan proves the 15-2. Love to see it, my man. Good job to Bogdan Grod. With that, we had our lone women's matchup of the evening, and Jasmine DeVicious took on Mara Bueno Silva. And I could have told you from the get-go, Mara was not going to win this. Okay, we knew that Jasmine was going to do it, and she did it in dominant fashion. 3 of 8 on takedowns, outstrikes her 56-37 significantly, 164-41 in total strikes, domination, 7 minutes, 11 seconds of control time. 4-fight win streak. Now for Jasmine, she's ranked number 12. I say we bump her up to 10. I think she's earned herself a number 10 spot here. I mean, it's overdue. Really should be. Couldn't get the finish, but at the end of the day, doesn't even matter. As for Mara Bueno Silva, make it 3 straight losses, and she has not won officially since February 2023. So Mara Bueno Silva, currently ranked number 7 at women's bantamweight. I wouldn't be surprised if they cut her in the coming days. It was a rough, rough defeat for Mara Bueno Silva. I mean, clearly, flyweight isn't the answer for her. Okay, stick to women's bantamweight division. How about Ellen Perez next? Ellen Perez to get a spot in the top 10. I think that's what you do. I think number 11th ranked Ellen Perez. She's on a win streak. She's my pick for biggest riser of the year. I say we do that. Perfect. Book it. You already know. Now, as for Jasmine, you know, she's going to be ranked number 12, 11, 10, and she deserves a top 10 opponent. You got Caitlin Serminara at 8. You got Rose Namajunas at 6. You got the losers. You got Natalia Silva, Macy Barber, Aaron Blanchfield, Manfred. One of them is going to lose their opponents for Jasmine Justavicius. You can even have her run it back with Tracy Cortez. I'm excited to see what transpires. But, I mean, decent performance for Jasmine. Was it the most entertaining fight? No. No, it was not entertaining. But it doesn't always have to be too entertaining. So, there you have it. Jasmine, good win. Improving to a very, very nice 13-3. After that, you know, someone brought to my attention that Terrence McKinney hasn't gotten a single performance bonus in the UFC, and I think that's wrong. I think that's wrong because this dude is now a staggering 16-7 and has never gone the distance. 16 wins, 16 finishes. I mean, domination, gets his eighth career knockout. Did we add to two? Truly, 2 minutes as well. Demir Hadzovic stood no chance. Demir, comically enough, landed a takedown. It was immediately reversed. Not even but 4 seconds, 3 seconds, it was reversed. And Terrence McKinney just laid into him from back control. I mean, he got into top back control, laid into him. 54 significant strikes to 4. Demir never stood a chance. Should have stayed retired. 2-fight losing streak now for Demir. And as for Terrence, a much-needed win. I mean, this dude was coming off of a nasty knockout loss to Esperon Ribovics. And now he's back in the win category. And I'm more than happy for him. Good job to Terrence McKinney. It's tough business out there. It's tough business, especially when you're losing over and over and over again. But I'm content with it, man. Good job, Terrence. Happy for you. And he's got big things ahead in the lightweight division. Really, really does. It's tough to pair him with anyone, I'm going to be honest. He really has a hard, hard history of losing. But I will say, I will give him this, is that if he can keep this up, if he can keep it going, he'll be something one day. He'll be a star one day. He's only 30. He's not even in his prime yet. So Terrence McKinney, be careful of how much damage you take. But if you deal damage like that, you will go far. He predicted it correctly, so I was pretty freaking happy. Following that, we had our heavyweight matchup between Shamil Gaziev and Thomas the Train Peterson. And Shamil Gaziev might be my favorite UFC heavyweight. He just might be. I mean, dude is the next Derek Lewis. Thomas' main attack here was getting the takedown. Gets one takedown. Shamil just stands up with him, holding on to his back. Shamil then reverses it. Shamil boxes around with the back. And then Shamil clips him with a beautiful hook. And out cold goes Thomas Peterson. And in a very almost scary scenario, Thomas Peterson on the ground. Ref hadn't waited off. Thankfully, Shamil walked off. But Thomas took out his mouth guard before the ref had even stopped anything. That's your one-way ticket to broken teeth right there. Okay, so I'm glad Shamil decided to land a walk-off and not follow up, but, I mean, disaster avoided. Shamil, like we had mentioned, ranked number 14. Good win for him. And, I mean, this is Shamil Gaziev. Where's Shamil at on my sheet? His 9th career knockout, 12th career finish. Good win. Good win for Shamil. I mean, it was expected. 2-fight winning streak now for Shamil. As for Thomas, I don't think he's UFC caliber. I'm going to be honest, he's not UFC caliber, but if you need an opponent for Hamdi, how about him versus Thomas Peterson? Works perfectly for me. Shamil, it's always comical watching him fight. A 3-minute knockout here, good for him. A lot of options. You know, you give him a ranked opponent. Wilder Cortez Acosta is ranked one spot above him. You also have Marcos Rogione Lima. You have Tai Tuivasa. You got Derek Lewis. There's a lot of options for good old Shamil Gaziev. So, Shamil picking up the win. We knew he'd get it done in round one as well. Thomas, I'm sorry you're from Minnesota. I love you. But, yeah, you have unfortunately had to be met with the Baranian Basher. That is Shamil Gaziev. That's not his nickname, but how about the Baranian Bomber? Ooh, I don't know. The Baranian Bomber sounds like a terrorist name. Shamil, don't adopt that as your nickname. Following that, we had a competitive featherweight matchup between Muhammad Naimov and Khan Offley. Muhammad getting the better of pretty much every exchange, but Khan kind of refused to go down at any point. 32 significant strikes and 2 takedowns give Muhammad Naimov the win over Khan Offley, who only landed 31 significant strikes himself. You know, this was fought on the ground. I mean, 10 minutes of control time combined, 5.5 compared to 3.5. Oh, so I guess it was only 9. But Naimov, 79 total strikes to 57, just had his number. Every single round, you get 30, 27, 30, 27, 29, 28, as Naimov, the minus 260 favorite, gets it done. You know, Naimov, doing what you got to do. 12-3 now, back in the win category. It's the name of the game. Name of the game, if we're matchmaking featherweights, I mean, Bogdan Grodd versus him could be a fun fight. Naimov is 30, so I mean, they're pretty close in age. As for Khan Offley, I mean, this dude was, I think, I don't even know if he was a runner-up on the Ultimate Fighter season finale. I think he just fought on there. Dude is 12-4, taking some tough losses, 0-2 in the UFC. I doubt he'll be back. Okay, but Naimov always fights on these Saudi cards, Abu Dhabi cards. He'll be back. Him versus Bogdan Grodd is the new matchup that I've decided to make in my head. And that's the matchup we're going to go with. So good stuff there for Naimov getting the win. It's not the worst fight I've seen. Not the worst fight. Now, could have been more entertaining, but you know what? I'm done being negative. I'm done being negative. We're only going to search for the positives the rest of this podcast. After that, we had our final prelim of the night. And had we not had the first matchup on our main card, this probably would have won my fight fight of the night. I mean, Fairzaim and Mike Davis, very entertaining. Very entertaining. Fairzaim, 35 significant strikes to 20. 58 total strikes at 30. 4 of 7 on takedowns. Mike Davis goes 1 of 8. 7 minutes and 11 seconds of control time for Fairzaim. 3 minutes, 59 seconds for Mike Davis. Mike Davis, 3 reversals on the ground. Fairzaim, 2. Mike Davis throwing up submission attempts left, right, and center. Only one registered, but let's be real. I know for a fact that he was throwing up a lot more than they're crediting him at 4. It's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive win for Fairzaim. Make it 5 straight wins. Dana White said on the press conference that he wants to see him in the rankings. Boom. Boom, boom, boom. Bye-bye, Grant Dawson. Bye-bye, Grant Dawson. We're throwing Fairzaim in the rankings. And even if Fairz isn't ranked, Grant Dawson, Jalen Turner, Hafa El-Fazeev, Benil Dariush, he's getting a ranked opponent. Trust me on that. Now, if it's up to me and I'm matchmaking, Paddy Pimblett's taking on Michael Chandler. You're doing a fun matchup there. Hafa El-Fazeev, he's taking on someone like Benoit Saint-Denis. He's taking on a Jalen Turner. Grant Dawson's out there. It's, I don't know, Benil Dariush feels like a guy you're going to give Fairzaim to. So, good win there. As for Mike Davis, I mean, Mike Davis, he had taken some time off, almost a full year. Snaps his little win streak, but he's just hasn't been active. Hasn't been active since 2020. He'd only had 4 fights. This was his 4th fight. So when you're only averaging 1 fight a year, it's just not going to get it done for you. Mike Davis, I'm sure he'll be back. You know, lightweight action, him versus Terrence McKinney could be a super fun fight. But I don't know. It's tough luck. Fairzaim, poised for big things in 2025. I should have picked him to be the biggest riser at lightweight. He is a stud. With that, we get to our main card, and when we kick things off with the fight of the night, I just already know things are going to be going fantabulous. I mean, it's just a dogfight. Just a dogfight between Saeed Nurmagomedov and Vinicius Oliveira. And I'll say the one downfall, and I'm not supposed to point out negatives, was the fact that Saeed gassed at the, like, you saw it in round 2 and round 3. He had no stamina, but the thing is he's so talented, Vinicius couldn't catch him. He couldn't catch him. Vinicius, 43 significant strikes. Saeed, 38. 3 takedowns for Vinicius with a submission attempt. Saeed had 1 takedown himself. 1 of 9, actually. 58 seconds of control time. Vinicius, 3 of 5, gets 7 minutes. But Saeed wins round 1, dominant fashion for him. Then round 2, Vinicius wins. And then round 3 was competitive, but Vinicius did get the better of Saeed. So Vinicius Oliveira, guys, don't blink. He is now 3-0 in the UFC. 2 fight of the night, performance of the night, one of the greatest knockouts of 2024, and a win over Ricky Simon, who is a former main eventer. So Vinicius Oliveira, welcome to the men's bantamweight division, and welcome to a ranked opponent. Because we got Montel Jackson at 15, Marcus McGee at 14, Amin Zahabi at 13, and who I think you should fight, number 12, Kyler Phillips. You even got Mario Batista there. Vinicius Oliveira, absolute dog, love you. Great work. Great, phenomenal work. I'm excited to see what he brings to the table next. Truly, he's got a lot of big opponents on the table, and hopefully one of them will accept a fight with him. For Saeed, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Saeed is so talented, but 18-4, I mean, his only losses are close decisions. I mean, and he's finished just about everyone else he's fought. He'll be back. There's plenty of bantamweights out there. Rowdy Barcelos, a rematch between those two, could be a fun one in the making. I'd even give him a ranked opponent, you know, him versus Montel Jackson would be a fun fight. Damon Blackshear could be another opponent he takes on. We'll have to see, but yeah, good fight there. Is it fight of the year? No, I'm still saying that fight of the year is Umar Merab, but this one's pretty good. It's pretty good. This has been the best fight night of the year so far, be it we've only had 2 fight nights, so it is what it is. After that, we got into what I was expecting to be one of the best fights of the night. I thought it would be good, but no. Sergey Pavlovich versus Jarzynia Rozenstruik falls unbelievably flat. I mean, so flat, I mean, you never pick her up at a bar. Sergey, 25 significant strikes, 17, lands 2 takedowns, does nothing. Does absolutely nothing. 145 to 23 strikes on the ground. 6 minutes, 17 seconds of control time. I mean, round 1, Sergey just barely outstriking him. Distance striking the whole time. Round 2, Sergey was like, oh, I can take him down. Then round 3, Sergey was like, even sooner, oh, I can take him down. And Sergey gets the win. Now, I think he just wanted to get back in the win category. He'd been on a 2-fight losing streak. I don't know if he's injured. I think the Tom Aspinall knockout has destroyed his confidence for some reason. He is no longer just throwing caution to the wind, but 19-3, back in the win category. Good stuff for Sergey Pavlovich. Now, as for Jarzynia, you know, mind you, his first loss since May 2023, he was cut this morning. Okay, he was cut. Jarzynia Rozenstruik, the number 9 heavyweight in the world, is no longer in the UFC. I find this kind of shocking, But I do want to say that it's been pretty lackluster. Joins the UFC, I mean, all knockouts, and then Francis takes it to him. Then he knocks out Junior Dos Santos, then puts up a five-round dud against Ciryl Gane. Then knocks out Augusto Sakai, then a dud against Chris Blades. Then gets knocked out by Volkov. Then finishes Chris Dawkins. Then gets destroyed by Helton Almeida. Then puts up a boring fight with Shamil, boring fight with Ty, boring fight with Sergey Pavlovich. I just don't think the UFC saw any excitement in him anymore, which really sucks. But Jairzinho Rozenstruik at 15-6 now gets cut from the UFC. Now, I do want to point something out right now, is that he's better than the number 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, or maybe I dare I say 10. I mean, it's pretty crazy they're cutting him. He's going to be a killer to whatever league he gets to. I hope he comes back to the UFC, but I mean, when you're putting up doozies left, right, and center, Jairzinho Rozenstruik, you gotta go. Now, I think I might have been saying Sergey got cut. That's not what I'm saying. Jairzinho got cut. Sergey, you're still ranked number 4, but I mean, not the most exciting fight. You have a loss to the number 3 and number 1 guy, Curtis Blades, you've already beaten. I think Sergey and Helton Almeida is the fight to make. Now, you also have Mick Parkin and Marcin Tybura fighting. Winner of that you could take on. You could even just book Sergey versus Sergey and Spivak versus Pavlovich, which could be fun. Derek Lewis, you two could rematch. I don't know. Lots of options. But a dud. Absolute dud here, and a shame, because there was so much potential with this. With that, we get to the co-main event, and I don't want to say it was bad, but it's just two technical dudes squaring off, and unfortunately, Michael Venom Page just has more experience than Shara and puts it up there. 30-27, 30-27, 20-28. I honestly had Shara winning a close decision. It might have been bias, but I mean, this was just how close the fight was. This was not 30-27. Round 1, Page outstrikes him by 4. Round 2, Page outstrikes him by 7. Round 3, Shara outstrikes him by 6. So I give Shara round 3, even though Page landed some hard shots. Round 1 was pretty even. I gave it to Shara because he stuffed a takedown, landed a good shot in there. Round 2 went to Page with his strike game. This was just technical. Super, super technical. Name of the game, and, you know, we were mentioning undefeated fighters. Shara, no longer undefeated. 15-1 now at the number 14 spot in the men's middleweight division. Tough to say what'll be next for the Bullet Shara-Magomedov. Now, his first professional defeat is a decision, a close decision to MVP. I'm not going to knock him for that at all. Now, this does kind of hurt his stock. I still don't think he should fight down. I'm going to be honest. I'd have him fight Paulo Costa next. I still want to see that fight. You even have a winner of Michelle Pereira and Abus Magomedov. You even have him versus Joe Pfeiffer and Kyle Gastelum, whoever wins that. There's a lot of options for Shara-Magomedov. I think he's even in a more weird position as MVP. You know, he's 2-1 in the UFC, yet to have a good finish, yet to have a fight of the night, and he's ranked number 15 at welterweight. 0 wins over ranked welterweights. He'll win over a number 14th ranked middleweight. I don't know what to do with him. A couple options in my mind. You book him versus Wonderboy. You book him versus Colby Covington. You book him versus someone fun. You know, Jeff Neal and Carlos Prates are fighting. Loser of that. You know, stick to welterweight. You know, he has no business at middleweight. Let's keep him at welterweight. He's got some fun options. If it's me, I think him versus Colby is a super fun fight, but I'm really in need of a finish, MVP. Even him, he was saying at the press conference, I just don't feel like myself, and he needs to fix that. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we get to the main event. And right now, as of right now, you know, I do think the Almeida knockout was probably the best knockout of the year, like viewing-wise, but this is currently a knockout of the year performance bonus, as Nazanin Imavov may have just retired Israel Adesanya. Crazy. Utterly crazy. Israel Adesanya knocked out by Nazanin Imavov in round number 2. And to make matters worse, Izzy tried to pull at Alex Pereira. He gets poked in the eye, just kind of like how Pereira was nutshotted. He weighs the ref off, switch stances, and Nazanin's first punch drops him. And he gets laid into, just a shame. Just a shame, man. It hurts. 30 seconds in round 2, and Nazanin Imavov is now the number 2 heavyweight, middleweight on the planet. 4 fight win streak now for Imavov. I consider it more like 5, that Chris Curtis fight he was going to win. I mean, every win gets more impressive with the next. My analysis was completely off. Imavov has the power. Izzy's washed, man. And I didn't want to admit Izzy's washed, but man, it's unfortunate. It really, really is. Imavov, great win. He'll be ranked number 2. You know, he just knocked out Adesanya. He might have just jumped Khamzat Chimaev, but now we have a clog up. You got Strickland, Duplessis, but now you got Chimaev and Imavov at the top. In my mind, I've already drawn up the picture. I have the vision for you folks here. Sean Strickland versus DDP. Win or lose, no matter what, they take on Khamzat in the summer. Whoever wins that faces Imavov in either September, if it's Sean Strickland or DDP still champion, or October in Abu Dhabi if Khamzat is champion. And I just think, you know, if you're Khamzat or Imavov, we cannot have them be fighting again when they've beaten two of the GOATs in Adesanya and Whitaker. So they're going to stick to the side. Imavov, not going to be fighting the rest of the year unless he gets a title shot, but great work from Imavov. It's not that I doubted him. I think I was more just hoping Adesanya wasn't washed. But 1-4, finished 3 times. It's time to go. Time to go for Adesanya. You know, I know people were saying, I know even he was saying, you know, he's not going to retire, but it just doesn't get better. It does not get better if you're Adesanya. The losing streak's 3. It's bad. It is bad, 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 bad. And, you know, he's just getting finished now. The worst time he's been finished in his career. He's going to be ranked number 4, in my opinion. Whitaker will probably be bumped down to 5. And these are the names he's going to be coming up against. Kyle Machado, Anthony Hernandez, Roman Dolidze. You know, I mean, I doubt they're going to book fun fights for him. It's sad. It's sad. Adesanya, the downfall of Adesanya. If he's going to fight again, it's going to be Kyle Barallo. I'm going to be honest. You know, unless you do Kyle versus Robert Whittaker, I don't know, is he? It was a good run, but, I mean, age just caught up to him. His chin is gone. I mean, Pereira took his chin. Alex Pereira took Adesanya's chin from us. So, good win to Imavov. Title shot is in his future. Good work. Good work all around. No hate. No hate whatsoever at all to Imavov. He's an absolute stud. I'm a fan of his. It's just, you know, had to root for Adesanya one last time. But guys, that's all we got for today's episode. A lot of fun stuff. Not fun stuff to cover. We'll be back later this week, you know, 2 episodes per week. Make sure to check out that Jimmy episode. I may have some collabs coming up with another podcaster. You know me, I'm actually getting into networking. You know the name of the game. Next time up, UFC 312 predictions on what is potentially the worst pay-per-view of all time. What? We'll have to discuss it. Checking in with the NHL, new UFC fights, new things in pop culture, and your official Super Bowl prediction. I'll give you a wink, wink. We're definitely not going with who you think we are. All right, gentlemen, have an amazing week. Ladies, you also have a good week. And as always, to all my fans and all my haters, I'll catch you next week on the Surprise Jab Podcast.